Begin a new sefer Vayikra, and it begins with the pasuk Vayikra El Moshe Vaydaber Hashem Elav Me'ohel Moed Lemor, that Hashem calls to Moshe and He speaks to him Me'ohel Moed. So I actually think that we've seen this before, probably in Parshas Truma, if I'm not mistaken, with the Ohel Moed. So, well, I'm not going to do this one inside. Where he just has a discussion as to where the word moed comes from. So he quotes Unkelus and says that Ohel Moed means a Mishkan Zimna. It's a from time to time kind of abode. He quotes Rashi, who is of the opinion that moed is Lashon Va'ad. It's towards the very end. And his, I don't remember which one is his specific conclusion. He quotes the Mechilta, which says that Ohel Moed, also Zimna, Mizman Lizman, that's from time to time. I think that's the one that he actually agrees with. The last line he says, Ohel Shenizvayid Brichu Im Moshe Yisrael. It's a place where God communes with the people. So, differences of opinion. It's not so much a conclusion that I'm looking to discuss, but the point is that in trying to get to the question of the grammar, and where the word comes from, there are differences of opinion in terms of what moed means. In some of the things which we're going to see tonight, most notably, I mean, the one that stands out to me is the Karban Shlamim. Okay, what does Shlamim mean? Don't answer the question now. But we you know how it's typically translated is a peace offering. So he gets into this discussion about what the word Shlamim means with reference to the Karban. Okay, we'll get there. We're going to get there. Okay. Okay, we're going to get there.
All right, excited.
Let's take a look at the next one. Vaydaber Hashem Elav Me'ohel Moed Lemor. Then Hashem speaks to Moshe, Me'ohel Moed. Take a look. Take a look what he says. Kanamar Me'ohel Moed Shehu HaMishkan Michutz LaParochas. Okay, here the pasuk says that God speaks to Moshe, Me'ohel Moed, which seems to imply from the Mishkan, which is Michutz LaParochas. Okay, so in other words, within the Mishkan, the part of the Mishkan where you have the Shulchan, the Menorah, and the small Mizbeach, that's where it seems that God is talking to Moshe. V'makom Acher, in Parshas Truma, God says, "V'dibarti itcha me'al hakaporis mibein shnei akruvim." Okay, so that I'm going to speak to you from on top of the kaporis, from between the kruvim, which of course would mean that the source of God speaking, whatever that means, comes from the Aron, which is in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So, is that a contradiction? Well, that's what it seems, that it isn't a contradiction, right? So, Ayin Rashi Kan V'Sham B'Parshas Truma B'Shem HaSifra Omnam Al Derech HaPshat Yesh Lamar. So, he says to look at Rashi, which I'm going to encourage, but in the interest of time, I'm not going to do that. And he says, Al Derech HaPshat, this is what it means. She'ein Mem Me'ol Moed L'Horas HaMakom Shemenu Adibur Yotzei. He says, the Mem in the word Me'ohel Moed that we have in our pasuk is not telling us that is where God's dibur is actually coming from. Aval hu mem ha'inyan laharos ha'inyan shemimenu yidaber, that it's a mem which is describing that the sound is going to come from that arena. Ki mikan ve'elach ha'dibur hu me'inyonei karbanos ha'nasim bi'ohel moed. Okay. So what's he saying? That the mem in Me'ol Moed, by Derech Hashem Elav, Me'ol Moed means Me'inyana de Ol Moed.
Topic?
Yeah, meaning things related to what's supposed to happen here. Kach Shemati Mipi Ish Amiti, how do you say it? I'm sorry. Amiti with an ayin. Mashmul Chen Tov. Okay, no. Or Amitai, I don't know. Usmuchim L'Perish Zem Atzasi B'Mechilta de Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Okay, so what's the point that he finds a contradiction in the way that God's voice comes to Moshe, and he says that it's not in this case in our parsha, it's not referring to a geographical location. It's in Yane Ol Moed, and that's what the mem is indicating. So just a simple but helpful insight. Okay, the next one, he has a lot on Perek Aleph, but I chose to go in the route in which I went, so we're actually going to move on to Perek Beis, where we're introduced to the Karban Mincha. Now, If you read through Vayikra, one of the beautiful things about Vayikra, and I probably should have said this at the outset, is, as you said before we actually started this year, that when it describes the Karbanos, it's very formulaic in the sense that it's easy to learn words. There is a Midrash which talks about how children, when they learn Vayikra, they should begin, when they learn Chumash, rather, they should begin with Vayikra. And one of the reasons given is because just as the children are pure, the Karbanos are pure, I don't remember which is the order of how that's presented, but because Karbanos are pure, children are pure, so they should become acquainted with one another. Right, and it's structured very nicely, and in the way in which it presents the Karbanos, and most of it is the same insofar as how it's described. Each of the Karbanos are described based on the level. I don't want to call these each a Karbanol of a Yorid, but the way in which it's described is, you know, more expensive. So like the first one, for example, is Imola Karbanol Min Habakar. Right, if it's coming from bigger, larger animals, im min hatzon karbanol min haksavim. If it's a sheep, and then at sheni we see im min haof olo karbanol. If it's a bird, and then the next series of karbanos is v'nefesh ki sakriv karban mincha laHashem solus yet. Now, a karban mincha is a little different than those other kinds of karbanos. In a karban olo v'yorid, which is a specific type of karban, it depends on your means, what you can afford, which would determine whether you're bringing a more expensive animal or a mincha offering, but that is not the same as a karban mincha. Okay, so anyway, when we get to Perek Beis, we're introduced to two different ideas which we haven't seen before. The first one was at the very beginning when it describes a person who brings a karban. It says Adam ki akriv mikem karban laHashem, and then in Perek Beis it says v'nefesh. So there's a distinction which the text makes between an Adam, a human being, and a Nefesh, which also is a human being. What's the difference between those? Okay, that's not our topic, but I'm just pointing it out. And then, of course, we get into the question of what's a Karban Mincha. So when we hear the word Mincha, what does it remind us of? Ashrei. What? Ashrei. Ashrei, right? Okay. The Tefillah of Mincha. So he asks the question, where does this word Mincha come from? Why is it used to describe this kind of karban, and why is it used to describe the tefillah that we have in the afternoon? Okay. Shem mincha yishamesh gam al masa arnoni anitan min ha'eved al yad ha'moshelbo kemo batimod moav l'david avadim no se'im mincha. That mincha is some type of that is given from the lesser to the moshel, to the ruling, to the ruler. Vayhi lo she'eved vayashev lo mincha. Mizer nir lamar shu mishareish nachshe horaso. I don't think it's Noach. Shoraso gam hashpalav or adam ilamala lamata kemo kasher yaniach yado shu hefach yarim yado. He says that what is the? Oh, I'm sorry. Mishareish nunches. That's what it is. It's the shoresh. Okay. That mishoresh Noach. I read it wrong. Mishoresh nunches, which has to do with something which goes down, okay, down, to rest, or the opposite of kasher yarim yado. Yarim yado means it goes up, and v'chasher yaniach, it means it goes down. Ulefi zeh, horas shem mincha, davar sha'eved marabo achno aso la'adonav. The word mincha is an indicator of how the eved, how the servant, shows his subservience to his master. Yorebo shiflas madrigaso neged mash nisalala b'madriga, the way that he is lower than the person who is higher than him. Ulchavonazo yishamish shem mincha b'shiluach gam al kol matana hanasuna miadam l'chaveru. When somebody is giving a mincha, right? Think about it. How we utilize the word mincha to somebody else. Why would a person need to send a mincha? It's like an appeasement, you know, I messed up, I feel a little lower than you now because of, perhaps, that's one way to look at it. Kemo mincha le'esav achiv, like when Yaakov sends a mincha to Esav. What does Yaakov want to show? Sh'rotz Yaakov la'aroz le'en Esav, sh'hu nichna tachto mechavdo kadon al eved. Here's a mincha coming from Avdecha Yaakov, and who are you? You're Adoni Esav, you're my master and I'm the servant. U'lehefech alamatana nintenes min ha'nichbar ala shafel men ha'madjiga. Right, the way in Megillas Esther, when it talks about how Achashverosh is giving gifts to everybody, That's Mas Asa Melech. Vayitein Mas Eis Ki Ara Melech. Sin Aleph Tuf. As opposed to Mincha, which goes from a lower to an upper. Al Shem Hisnas Us. HaMekabel BaKabel HaMatan Azo Liyoso Yakar Be'inei HaNosim HaKavdom Zeh. I think about it. If you get a gift from a king, then wow, this is amazing. First of all, I'm elated because the king thinks highly enough of me to give me something, and it's just it's a wonderful thing which I'm going to treasure. As opposed to, and if somebody receives a mincha, what's Esav's first response to Yaakov? I don't need it, thanks. Like, you keep it. I don't need a gift from you. Now, it's not to say that a mincha isn't a nice gift, but owing to who the recipient is in comparison to the giver. You know, they might say, okay, thank you very much, I appreciate your efforts, and then after the guy leaves, they'll turn around and throw it out. Could be, I don't know. Not that that's necessarily, that's not the point. That's not the point that he's trying to make. But he's saying that, what does the word mincha come from? Based on this, he says, I can tell you why Chazal called the afternoon prayer mincha. Because from midday until sunset, the sun is going down from being at the height of the day, the middle of the sky, and it's being humbled, vioretes, and I don't know if humbled is the right word to describe the sun, but it's being lowered, lamata ag marshkiyasa, until it sets. Dome lemelitza srafea yom le'arov, vehyom reid me'od, so that's shoftim yitas, I did not look it up, so I don't remember the context, but the point is, he quotes Tosis there in Pesachim, who says Samach leMincha nischabat b'tam shem tefilas mincha, that mincha is attached to this idea of tefilas mincha. So if we're talking about a poor person who can't give anything except for a tenth of an eighth of a flour, and this tiny thing that he has is what he's bringing to God. Yerbezet godel kniuso yoter min hashira maybe par. This guy who's giving everything that he has, and he has nothing. That's his hachna. That's the way in which he subjects and subservient and makes himself subservient to God, humble before God, in a way in which even the rich person doesn't. I think about it. For a rich person to give a par, it's like a drop in the bucket. It's nothing. But for a poor person who has nothing, to give nothing, to give his anything, which is nothing, that is pure achna. L'chein al karban zeh shuma'at me'od b'kamuso u'nachsham shem karban mincha. It's a hingebunzgafer. Hingebunzgafer. Suffer. Okay. And that is, so I hope that word clarified everything. Okay. Who gives a karban mincha? An ani, a poor person. And so similarly, we can understand how, you know, I mean, I think it's a little more metaphorical than anything else. Like, why should a person feel more humble, you know, when the sun's strength is waning during the day? Even though, as we know, sometimes the sun in the afternoon could be extremely strong. Okay, but the idea that it has nothing to do with its strength; it has to do with its position in the sky. So that's why the tefillah for that time period is mincha. Could it relate to the feeling that a person has? Maybe, could be. But that's not the idea. It has to do with the idea that mincha, by definition, is nach, going down, and hachna is not from the same shoresh, but that's where it's coming from. And so that's a suggestion as to what a mincha is. It's coming from a place of shiftless, a place of subservience, a place of humility. That's with reference to the karban. And similarly, insofar at least as how the sun is indicating what tefillah we're up to, that's what mincha is as well.
That's fantastic.
Okay, we move on. We move on to a very strange concept which appears here. It's not so strange. You know, we have a rule regarding karbanos. Kol karbanecha takriv melach. Right? Every karban needs to have melach, right? Melach is salt. Okay, and that's, I think, the pasuk says, right? Look at page 552. Yudimol v'chol karban minchascha. There's a lot of talk here about melach. The word, you know, certainly Nechama Leibowitz would be all over this as a milah mancha in this pasuk. It appears four times, right? Melach timlach, tashbis melach, takriv melach. Right?
The end is more inclusive.
Inachinami. But the question is, What is this melach bris elohecha? I mean, just as an example, the salt of your God's covenant, I mean, what does that mean? What is the melach bris elohecha? So he has his whole comment here is on what the word melach means. Now, I don't think that he's in any way rejecting the idea that melach refers to salt. Okay, I don't think that's a particularly debatable point, but in terms of this melach bris elohecha, right? It's like as an example. Remember the story of Moshe, and I don't even know if Moshe was there. Okay, Tzipora and her son in the hotel. Assume that Moshe was there. So she says, Chasan damim lamulos. What does Chasan damim lamulos mean? Like, we think we know what it means. A bridegroom of blood. Yeah. What does that mean? To foreskins? Or to the circumcised? It's just a strange... So I don't remember what he said, but I remember he redefined it. And I'm pretty sure maybe it was last day, I don't remember. But the point is that when you look at those words, you have to come up with a definition which makes sense. And the same thing which he says here, when it comes to melach bris elohecha. The because it's not like, you know, bris melach. You have that in another place in Torah. I think it's Naso or Balos, if I'm not mistaken, where you have something like that related to Aaron, where you have the bris melach, the covenant of salt. That I understand. But the trup doesn't fit with that here. It's melach, which has a yisiv, which is a ta'am. I don't believe it's a machaber. I think it's a ta'am hafzik. Okay? And then you have bris elohecha. Bris elohecha is a munach zakev. Those words are combined because a munach is a mechaber and it combines to the zakev. So you have melach, bris elohecha. So the R school translation is the salt of your God's covenant. What does that mean? Okay, so let's take a look at what he says. Chibur nifla. Hapol m'shem melach, hu mimelach tar kodesh, tergum mimulach mi'urav. Okay, what does mi'urav mean?
Combined.
Okay, and Mimulach, he says, has to do with that. Now, I don't know, he has very nice, the German words here, which would be very helpful. Getliche Wunderbar, Wunderbar is wonderful. Suza menzit, forget it. Okay, Domelo v'yiru ha-malachim, l'checha v'chovalecha. What are malachim in the book of Yonah? Sailors, right? The people who are on the ship. That Yonah is on, the ship that seems to be going down. Hashem Sheman Hige Hasfina Mehapchim Umaarvim Esamayim B'Meshutos. He says, what do people who work on a ship do? Right? Whether it's their rowing or whether just, you know, the rudder, or they're turning the water over. They're mixing the water in a different way. So he says that's what has nothing to do with again, I'm not saying the word melach doesn't mean salt. But there's another meaning of that shoresh, and that's the point. He's saying that sailors are not called malachim because they're sailing on salt water. Okay, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with what they do to the water. He says this shoresh is also used describing churban, destruction. And what is it? It has to do with mixtures. You have the word tarovas also describing churban. So these two words clearly have connections, as we saw, memulach meurav, and it applies in describing destructions as well. Al shem shenishtam usham sidrei ma'aseh bereishis v'nis balbalu. There's your word there. Okay, I'm going to bring that in. Okay, v'nisahar v'usham yisodo sukokos ateva l'bliotzi pri utvu alamachal adam ubehema. That basically, when there's churban and the ground is destroyed, it becomes fallow land. It can't do anything anymore. And, you know, I mean, you can't grow things from salt, but you can't grow things from Eretz Memulach either, meaning a place which has been overturned and therefore has been destroyed. V'yamar, al bilbul seder me'oros ha-shemayim, shemayim ki'ashan nimlachu, regarding the mixing up of the order of the luminaries of the heavens, shemayim ki'ashan nimlachu, that the heavens were like smoke mixed up, klamar kochav ha-shemayim k'suleihem is bablu, v'yashnu ha-seder tafkidam, mishtaram ba'aretz, ayin shem rashi. So he says that there was some kind of confusion which took place. I don't remember this chapter in Yeshayahu, but is that Yeshayahu? Which is the one that the missionaries like to use? Is it 51 or 53? I don't remember. I think it's 53. Isaiah 53. Is it? Because it's not 51. And regarding torn clothing, which are ripped, which is discussed in Yirmiyahu, Melachim, they're also just ruined. Kriyim Sachavos, Al Shem Shinishavim, Mishtachim Makom Makom Nikra Malachim, Al Shem Bilbu will say there on a Chasam Makom Yuchad. Malachim means that things are mixed up in the order of the way they're placed in one particular spot. Okay, right.
So how does that relate to.
Yeah, so. Okay, so skip 5 words, 6 words. Verazal. Yishamshu shorish melach gam ki inlinyan atarobas v'hit dabkus hadvarim yachad ki omram v'yikra rabba ki adam she melachim shnei nisarim shnei kariyamita umadbikam zebezeh, that they use it for different kinds of components. What is it that they're doing it for? They're making a hisarbus, a mixture of some kind. Hisdabkus means combining things together. As v'yikra rabba says, a person. Shnei nisarim. What are nisarim? Nails. Shnei kariyamita. What are kariyamita? Supports for a bed. That those two things they are combined together. The hamelach b'atzmo. I skipped the references. Nikra b'shmo al shem tarugo shnei yisodos hapchiyos shabo. So he says, what is it that melach is made up of? Two fundamental. He says yisodos. I was thinking about this, and the first thing that came to my mind. And I was hoping he would go in this direction, but he is not so scientific. Is what's salt? Sodium chloride, right? So there's two different elements, sodium chloride. So he says that that's not what melach is from. I mean, we know that it is, but he says, Ki be'etzem ha-melach, it's arbu and it's dachbo yachad uprat, yisoda eish, yisoda mayim. Now, that gets into the humors and, you know, the ancient science, which I'm not going to presume to understand. But that melach is made up of some, of fire and water. Okay, let's not get into the science here. We're getting into just the understanding of what, you know, melach is. Melach has unique qualities in the sense that it can preserve. Right, if you put meat, you put salt all over it, it can preserve. If you put salt all over a slug, what does it do? You don't know.
Never tried it?
Okay, God bless you. If you put salt all over a slug, this slug will very slowly be dehydrated of all its moisture, and it will die. Okay, salt will destroy a slug. So, you know, if you think about it, what's fire? What's water? Fire, on the one hand, can be used for building, right?
And destroying.
Water, same thing. So it has these dual qualities, and that's what salt is. The Shabbos Yisodas Eishibo Nimna Hamelach Lemosif Chom VeHevel. Okay, so for the component of salt, which is represented by fire, it can add Chom VeHevel. Chom is heat, and Hevel is, well, I mean, we sometimes say vanity, but I assume it's something along the same lines. Bnei L'Sarvo Shnei Yisodos Hevchios Shibo. There's two opposite and competing elements in it. Ki be'etzem ha-melech nis'arbu v'nis'aklu bo yisoda tachton im yisoda el'yon karas ha-melech v'shem bris Elohim klamar chibur nifla. Says there's something incredible about melech. Now I actually once gave a sermon about salt for a bat mitzvah that we had in the shul. It goes back 7 or 8 years, and the things which I discovered about salt, just in terms of what the commentaries say, one of the amazing qualities about salt is that it lasts forever. Okay, if you were to put salt in a time capsule and open it up in 5,000 years, it'll still be there, and it'll still be as potent as it was. You put a flower in there, you know, the flower, forget it. It's gone. So that's just one of the incredible qualities of melach, and that's what the Bris Elohim is. The Bris Elohim is something which is supposed to last forever, and even though it seems to be fraught with contradiction, and if you think about it, God says, "I love you because I love your parents. I love Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov." He's not going into this realm. He's just explaining what the word melach comes from. But I love you because I love Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. I hate you because of Egel. Okay, but guess what? Bris melach. So that's the that I think is the point that he's trying to make here, that it has in it contradictory elements which nonetheless somehow manage to work together, and at the same time it's coming from the word from a word which means a mixture of something. So when you get to the very end, skip to the end where it says V'amru perakam d'tanis kusim ovdim le'esh v'kedarim ovdim le'mayim. Right, there's one group, the Kusis, they serve what? They serve what? They serve fire. And the Kedarim, they serve water. Okay? That he says that what's the point of putting in Melach? To say, you worship fire, you worship water, well here's Melach, which comes from both, and we throw it onto everything. And it just becomes part of our Korban. It's a way of saying, it's like anti these different ideologies which God doesn't really like, and it's our way of indicating that we are, I guess, in a sense, above that in how we serve our God. So it's just that there's a lot to be studied in terms of understanding Melach and what Melach is all about, and that is some of it which he's trying to show us in terms of it's coming from the word of mixture. I don't know how much there's a focus on destruction, but of course, with the carbon, very often the carbon is at least cooked, if not burned, and therefore destroyed. I don't think he was going in that route, but this last idea as well, that it comes to counter perhaps other religious viewpoints outside of Judaism, is another thing to think about as well as much symbolism related to Melach, such as the one which I mentioned about it lasting forever. Okay, so I mentioned before, I gave you a very small taste about what Karban Shlamim is. So here we go. So we move on, of course, to Perek Gimel, which we were basically up to anyway. And now, after having talked about Karban Ola and Karban Mincha, the Chumash continues in talking about a Karban Shlamim. A Karban Shlamim. Okay, now, it's interesting. Is this where he talks about it here? What is the difference? Okay, let's take a look. Zebach Shlamim. Kenu karui b'chol ha-parsha, v'inkan, ola, v'chatas, v'ashem, shelo nesmach milas zebach. That zebach is a word which is used to describe the karbanos. V'etam, l'fi shabasar ha-shlam nechal ha-ba'alim, v'korei l'vnei beiso lov, v'myudav, sh'yachlu mizivcho, v'mosh avreim, yahalel ha-shem. What's the reason for why it's called a zebach? Because it's eaten by the owner of it, and he invites all of his family and all of his friends and everybody to eat, and it's a beautiful celebration of and it's a praise of God. We sepher lehem chasadav, and they talk about God's kindness. Gam laharbos ochlim shelo yavo basar kodesh lidei nosar l'chein nigru zevach shlamim. It's also meant to bring a lot of people to eat because you don't want to have anything left over. Ki zevach hu suda shel simcha, because when you talk about a zevach, you're talking about a meal which is a meal of rejoicing. That's actually a rule against why you're not supposed to have celebratory meals with non-Jews, because you may come to marry his daughter. Okay, but anyway, but the point is that it's a celebratory meal, but that's what zivcho means. Ki zevach hayom la'am ba'bama, ki zevach mishpacha lanu ba'ir, ma she'en kein shar karbanos she'en l'nesus ba'alam inim kriyin zevach. Other karbanos which are not meant to be eaten in such a fashion, so they're not called karbanos, they're not called zevach rather. And the lambs of atzeres is usually shavuos. Yeah, they are a suuda of joy for the kohanim. I'm not sure why he's mentioning that, but anyway. But the point here is that we're just being introduced to the idea of a zevach being a I don't want to call it a karban, but an offering which is shared with a group, and it's supposed to bring about simcha. And that leads us to the question of Shlamim itself, the word Shlamim. Where does it come from? So what he's going to do is he's going to share with us a number of different views from a number of different commentaries. And in the end, he's going to come to a conclusion. And we can vote. You don't necessarily have to like what he says. But the point is that the idea that a Karban Shlamim, how is Karban Shlamim usually translated, everybody?
Peace offering?
A peace offering, right? Because it comes from the word Shalom. Right?
Wrong.
Okay, so here we go. Perish Rashbam, Lashon Tashlumim, Shitzarach L'Shalem Es Nidro. That it comes from paying up or completing your neder. Vereish Nun Vav, that's the guy he quotes all the time, Tanah Lav. He says if that's the case, if it's from Tashlumim, then an Ola is also a Tashlumim. So how come it's not called Tashlumim? So therefore, that's not correct. He disagrees with the Rashbam. Gam eno nachon if you dig duk hamila ki ani fried min tashlumim shalom. Right, what you're going to take away from the word tashlumim, it would have to be called a karban shalom and not a karban shlamim. Kmo bo'u yimei shalom v'rabim shlomim kmo shna shlomim, or however that vowel is pronounced. Ve'em b'zeket ei lashiv ki ola af shehi ba b'nedava mikol makom misarei v'mok tzas chiyuvi. Even though, so when we talk about an ola, you're bringing it on account of a nedava. What's a nedava? A commitment of some kind of a gift that you're going to be giving. But nonetheless, it's not just a donation. There's an obligation element attached to a carbon ola. V'chaper al kirhu re'alei. V'ala v'ro b'mezid. Alav anitek la'asei. There are a number of reasons for why a person would bring a carbon ola. Those are three of them. For thoughts, bad thoughts, for violating an avera on purpose, or violating a lav hanitak laasei, right? Doing a negative mitzvah while fulfilling a positive mitzvah. So all those things require a korban ola. L'chein yikrena kasu b'shem ola shemuchvan ba hasiba goremes el nedavasa. That what's intended with the ola is that I'm bringing something up, raising something up, and that's what's attached to my nedava. Because what happens with the carbon ola is that it's kulo lashem. It's completely consumed, as opposed to a shlamim, which obviously has different reasons. Masha ein ken shlamim nedava gemura ve'im basiva hagoremes el nedavaso. You don't have a particular reason like you do with an ola. So you could talk about how it's a completion of a neder, but it doesn't have an obligation attached to it in the same way that an ola does. Okay, in other words, a shlamim, I guess most often is a voluntary carbon. It's a voluntary carbon as opposed to an ola, which is obligated. Okay, v'nira, did I skip something? V'nira. V'nira. That the Ramban thought that the word shlamim is like the word avanim shlemos. What does shlemos mean? Avanim shlemos means complete stones, untouched. Right? Klamar, sheva korban shlamim inba shum pigam kilkul ki inaba rakin tzad nidvas alev. He says, a korban ola, for example, and certainly korban chatas, is an element of I don't want to call it tainted, but that's what it is. It's tainted. Why? Because while certainly the person bringing the korban is giving it sincerely, the reason why they're giving it is not entirely sincere. Meaning, there's an obligation thrown upon them that says, okay, well, I did something wrong, and therefore I have to bring a korban, so I'm doing it partially out of my obligation, and partially because I really want to, you know, I want to get the kapara, the atonement, whatever it is that comes from the korban. Whereas, a korban shlamim is completely given for altruistic reasons. Why am I giving the carbon shlamim? It's voluntary. Okay? So I'm giving it for good reasons. And that, in a sense, is avanim shlemos, untouched, untainted by something that I may have done wrong. Okay, so that, which is what I just explained. Skip a line for a second, and not for a second, we're not going to go back to it. Go to the part which says, v'hinei rabuseinu. Okay, after the period. V'hinei rabuseinu, b'toras kohanim amru, Shlamim shematilin shalom ba'olam. He says the rabbis in Torah Kohanim, that's the midrash on Vayikra, they say that it has to do with shalom, of peace. Shlamim sheish ba shalom lamizbeach v'lakonim lamizbeach. It's like it's very peaceful. Shlamim ishu shalem maybe v'lo onen, somebody who is shalem, who is complete. That's the whole reason why they're giving it, because they're so happy with their life, etc. He says there's no doubt that is their main reason given for why this thing is called the shlamim, because it has to do with peace. Okay, now skip a line again. There's that dude again. I wish I knew who it was. He says pir shlamim inyan hashalom abicha zakein. Okay, remember that? That's what Yosef says to the brothers, okay, when they come back I guess the second time with Binyamin, and he says to them, Hashalom avicha hazaken. What does that mean? Right, I mean, we translate it to mean, how's your dad doing? Right? Inyan atzlacha.
Okay, success?
Success. In other words, is he well? V'karban shlamim b'mi ba'alim ha'shabala b'irchas Hashem erov simcha yakriv shlamim. He says that, why are they doing this? Why do people bring a shlamim? Because of the good things which are going on in their life. U'lezeh yitargamu shlamim freydenafer v'alerginin gen. Okay, but in other words, that it's coming from a place of happiness. It's not peace. Peace has a very different connotation. She says, but that's not correct, because that's a karban toda, not a karban shlamim. So then, how would you say that when it comes to the karbano olos and shlamim in shoftim? It's not coming from a place of happiness when people are fasting and crying. So his conclusion is like the Rashbam.
He rejected him. Didn't he reject him?
No, Reish Nun Vav rejected him, and now he quotes Reish Nun Vav, who says something else. And the Ketav HaKabbalah says, no, I like the Rashbam. Mechaim Shmuz Lashon Zivchei Shlamim, Alayam Shlamti Nidri. That I have fulfilled, paid up my neder. But it's not shalom. That's the point. That's the point. It's Tashlumim. Okay, so when people say a shlamim is a peace offering, you say, no, it's a fulfilling of a vow. You know, that's what it means. It's Tashlumim. Okay, I mean, unless you like, you know, the other perush. But that's not the route that the Ketav HaKabbalah goes. Okay, so again, I told you before that he's going to mention a few different viewpoints, and each one is pretty good. I mean, I do like, for example, what the Ramban says, but the Ramban says a little more esoteric. The Ramban saying it's like Avanim Shleimos, that it's an untainted kind of karban. Okay, but is there more to it? And that's why I think he favors the Rashbam in the sense of Tashlumim. Okay, now once we're on that, now once we're on the topic of trying to understand a word which we're all familiar with, we get to the word of achok. Achok, I found this to be fascinating. Okay, so we're all familiar with achok. What's achok?
Statue.
So, what kind of a statue specifically?
Without a reason.
Okay, so he doesn't reject that, but what he does share with us is another, instead of just calling achok a law, there is a root, a shorish word, from which the word chok comes. And so it's introduced to us here in Pasuk Yud Zayin, at the very last Pasuk in Parak Gimel. Okay, and it's in the context of talking about if your korban is an aiz, right after telling us about in the korban shlamim, first it tells us about the bakar, then it tells us about its own, then it tells us about an aiz. So after describing the rules of the aiz, which is the same as the rules of the tzon, of the sheep, he says, this is chukas alon darosachem b'chomosh v'sichem, kochelev v'chodam v'sochelu, that all chelev and all blood you're not allowed to eat. This is a chukas olam. Okay, olam. Now, what's the reason for that? So actually the truth is that for not eating blood, we do get the reason in a number of places in the Torah. This is a good trivia question. Which Isser in the Torah, or which Isserim in the Torah, are mentioned the most?
Blood, like, cannot five do. Times.
Blood is more than five times.
More than five?
Yeah, it's more than five. So Avodah Zarah obviously is mentioned all over the Torah, and the prohibition against consuming blood, I think it's closer to 10 times. Okay, it is mentioned in a lot of places. In the context of Korbanos, for sure, in the context of the kosher rules, in Shmini, and in Re'ei, I believe it's mentioned in both those places and other places as well. So it is mentioned a bunch of times. So good trivia question. Anyway, but we're looking at the word chukas olam. So let's take a look. Chukas olam. Chiyuv davar abilti mevurar me'inyano heoso mechuyav mitzad ateva o mitzad amusar o mitzad asechel rak ha-mitzvah al-achiyav ahu He says that there are different things which we have for which there are explanations which are of the teva explanation, right? Natural law. We understand naturally, for example, I don't know, like you can't murder somebody. Maybe there's a natural law element to that, even though it's also ethics. Omitzara Musar, ethics, right? You shouldn't lashon hara. Like I get it. There's an ethics component. Omitzara Sechel, right? The intelligence, logic explains what this is all about. But a chok falls out of the realm of all that stuff because it isn't rationally explainable per se. Who cares if you chelev? What's the difference? For example, zeh nikra milshonenu chok. It's a gezetz. Benosein hachok. Now, I'm sorry, somebody who gives a chok, yikra mechokek. A gezetz geber, right? Who shem mush'al melashon chakika ureshima aluach evan ve'eitz ushar davar. What, that's a word which is borrowed from chakika. What is chakika? Some type of carving, right? Or an engraving, an inscription on a luach evan ve'eitz. On a stone, I don't know, board, a stone tablet of some kind, or wood, or something along those nature, that nature. So, what's the explanation of what a chok is? He called the var shechiyuv al mivurah mitzad chiyuv ativiyam musar v'asechel, anything which is understood in those three arenas that were mentioned before: nature, ethics, logic, rational, etc. There's no way to forget it. You know why? Because even if we forget it, another group of decent people are gonna flop up, and they're gonna come up with, hey, you know, stealing is really not cool. It's not yours. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. Taking somebody's life. I mean, what happened to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? Right. So that is fine. He calls Hashem Adam Chayim al Adamah Disparalim Tamei Chiyuv Zeh Adavar. People are alive. They know. They get it. It's a social contract. So as opposed to something which doesn't really have a rational explanation, it's something which is going to be easily forgotten. And in order to prevent it from being forgotten, it needed to be written down so that it would not be forgotten. It has to be written down for future generations. But we know ink can fade, right? So what do you do? So what is a chok? Something which is mechukak. It has to be written down. So I mean, just think about Egyptian hieroglyphics, right? The paint might be peeling. Ink. But things which are carved out, they're there. They're there. And even if they're covered up by years of dirt and sand, the archaeologists, they scrape away that stuff and the carving is still there. Right, so that it should not be forgotten. Right, anything which is engraved in that way, or however you want, carved out, it's like it's stuck in a preserved box forever. He says that's why everything which is a chok, like we've been describing, something which whose explanation is not rational, it's not there. But that's why it's called a chok. Because it should be inscribed in a book which will last forever. And the book which lasts forever is one which has an engraving or a carving out.
Interesting.
Okay?
I like it.
No, I mean, listen, it's beautiful. I mean, it's just, you know, up until now, somebody tells you chok, you say, yeah, chok, that's a law without a reason. Okay, now you say, but now I understand why it's called a chok. Okay, so that's the idea. That's what I thought, that's what I wanted
awesome.
To share.
Really
okay, the next one is, so in that same pasuk, we have kol chelev v'chol dam. So I just wanted to point out because.
Well, how does he explain chukah so long? I mean, it's forever, just going to persist.
Yeah. Well.
Because the chok and it's
Yeah. No. Yeah. But that's the idea. I guess because what he's saying is that chukah so long because it's not rational, because there's no way to justify its existence, it's just a rule, and it is what it is. So it's chukas olam because it's mechukak. That's the idea.
I like it.
Okay, so that's the bottom line. So now this is actually a question which I didn't realize that it bothered me, but it bothered me because you know every now and then we get those steaks, the ribeye steaks from Costco. And if you ever buy ribeye steaks from Costco, you know that they have a lot of meat on them. They also have some fat on them, right? So anybody who's ever studied the Chumash, you know that you're not allowed to eat chaylev. What's chaylev? Fat.
Yeah.
So what is this fat that's on the meat that has a big OU on it? So it's a problem. My kids, some of my kids, they love that part of it.
I love it too.
I want the fat. And I'm, in the back of my mind, I'm like, how did this get past the kosher butcher? and the answer is
kosher chelev and not kosher chelev.
No. It's chelev on a chaya, which is kosher. Chelev on a behemoth, which is not. So what's the difference?
Okay.
Take a look. Shem chelev loshen ha-kodesh. Hashuman hanifrad she'enu im abasar kedavar echad. That's the difference. That there is a kind of fat which is not intertwined with the meat. Okay, there's fat, and anybody who's had liposuction could probably explain this to you very well. Okay, there's a kind of fat which is just separate from the meat itself, and there's a meat which is part of the, and there's a fat rather which is part of the meat. And there's a difference between those two. One of them is called chelev, and one of them is called shuman.
So shuman is kosher. Your kid doing
shuman?
So
shuman is kosher, yeah. The fat which is intertwined and together with the meat is called called
shuman.
So that's
where the basar. So the shuman is probably part of the basar.
That's the point. It's not a deep or incredible chiddush, but it's good to know that if your kid ever comes to you or anybody says to you, I thought you're not allowed to eat chaylev, and the answer is this is not chaylev. Okay,
it's shuman.
There you go.
Okay. Very good.
All right, so that's, we're here to learn. That's why we're here. Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We got two more. Right. We got two more. I made a little less, but I figured we'll have a good chance to get through everything. So that's what we're going to do tonight.
Okay.
So we're at the Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet. So here. Okay. So actually, to me, the most interesting chapters, and with all due respect to everything here, of course, is Perek Dalet and Perek Hey. Because they get into the realm of things which are a little more than these repeats. Perek Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, when it describes the Karban, Perek Beis is a little less because it's mostly talking about Karban Mincha and Solas and how that works. But certainly Perek Aleph and Perek Gimel, one which is describing the Karban Ola and one which is describing the Karban Shlamim, when it goes through the different animals, it's just very repetitive. If it's Bakar, then it's all this. If it's Tzon, then it's all this. If it's Ezim, then it's all this. Okay, thank you. Iman Ha'of, okay, it's a little different with the bird, but okay, the same idea. When you get to Dalet and you get to Hay, the circumstances which are leading into the different karbanos which are described here are very different, and it's a nice change from that which you get in the first couple of chapters. Having said that, I only gave you one comment on Perek Dalet and one comment on Perek Hay, which really don't impact the topics which are so fascinating. But hopefully they'll be interesting all the same. The second one is the last comment we're going to be looking at is about vidui, and I thought it was just a beautiful insight on what vidui is versus what vidui is not, based on, once again, trying to get to the root of the word vidui. What is its shoresh? And based on its shoresh. So let's first look at midama par. This is more, we've seen something along these lines, most notably when we saw his explanation for ayin tachas ayin. Remember ayin tachas ayin? Where he said that the pasuk is... where is it? Mishpatim, right? It's in Mishpatim. So I just want to quickly review it because it was such a great insight. Where he was saying that how do you have to look at the whole pasuk. He says, how do you know that ayin tachas ayin is a mitzvah which is monetary and not one which is a corporal punishment? So he told us there that. Let me see where the pasuk was. So it's Perek Chaf Aleph, pasuk Chaf Gimel. V'masson yihyeh, that if it's an accident, v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein. And what he said was, v'masson yihyeh v'nasata. That goes on every single phrase. means you have to give. And give means money. It doesn't mean a corporal punishment. V'nasata, you have to give. If the ason was nefesh, you have to give tachas nefesh. If the ason was ayin, you have to give tachas ayin. If ason shein, you have v'nasata, tachas shein. And that's the way he described it, which was a beautiful insight, explaining how everything is monetary. So here, obviously it's not in the same kind of extent that the words are shared over and over there, but here we have a similar kind of idea in terms of how a single letter is shared. So it's Perek Dalet, Pasuk Hey, where the Pasuk says that if a person is going to bring a karbon, a par for Nefesh Kisech, Hatavish Kagas, this is a kind of a chatas, that the person, or this is actually the power of the Kohen. So what is going to happen, Ima Kohen HaMashiach Yechata, so this is what he needs to do, if the Kohen has to bring Korban. So, Hevi HaSapar Al Pesach Ol Moed, Lefnei Hashem HaSamach, Hasid Al Rosh HaPar, a similar thing happens with Yom Kippur, by the way. The Kohen is going to put his hands on the par. L'kach HaKohen HaMashiach, Midam HaPar, Vehevi Oso El Ol Moed. So he has to bring Midam HaPar. So what do you mean, midam apar? I mean, obviously, this is the animal, so it's going to be the dam apar. What do you need the mem for? That's the question. Okay, so take a look what he says here. Midam apar. Okay? The Rabboseinu, is that what I gave you?
Yep.
The Rabboseinu, Sarech l'kabel, is called dam apar. In the Gemara of Zvachim, it says you have to collect all of the dam apar. L'zeh, einos memisharetes l'milas dam, l'farsho miktsas dam. So the concern with the mem is that the mem is telling us that you could take midam hapar, okay. From, meaning not all, okay? And what the Gemara is saying is that you have to take kol dam hapar. So he says that the mem is actually not going on the dam. That what is the mem doing? Aval hi misharetes lemilas hapar, kiluksiv dam me hapar. Okay, the idea that you're going to be taking blood from the par would imply not all the blood. Bahamachuvan, so he says, what's intended here? Shekabalas adam tzricha lios min hapar, that the gathering of the blood needs to come directly from the cow. Aval im nishpach adam, or the bull rather. Aval im nishpach adam al ritzpa pasul laos for the kli sharilin eskabel me hapar. If for whatever reason some of the blood squirts on the ground, which is going to happen, you don't collect that blood. It has to be the blood which comes directly from the par. V'yamru gorin mosifin v'darshin gorin os mem mimilas dam mosifin oso al milas hapar. Okay, so there are different things to be learned here, but the point is that his view is that the mem on midam is it shouldn't be applying to the blood. It's not midam as in some of the dam. It's midam. It's dam mehapar that has to come directly from the cow and not include things which go on the ground, and that a person should be as careful as possible, but not to think that if you just take a little bit of blood, that's sufficient. We want to get all the blood that comes out, but only all the blood that comes directly into the kli that they're going to be using to gather. He has more on this, but he kind of keeps going back around to the same point. So that's that's the part where I cut off.
The men. That explains the men.
Yeah, no, that's the point. That's the point. No, I'm saying he had, if you look here on my original notes, I cut off over here, but the rest of it is kind of reviewing the same point over and over again. Okay, the last point which we're going to look at today is the question about his vada. Okay, so moving into Perek Hay, and Perek Hay largely talks about the Korban Asham. Korban Asham is the guilt offering. So, what's the pasuk that I gave you? Pasuk Hey. So the Gemara, the pasuk rather, gives us a number of examples of different sins that people might be able to do. For example, shuasha. For example, things of that nature. So v'yashem lechas mi'el v'yaki yasham lechas mi'el v'isvada shechata alav. Then he has to do a vidui for what his sin was. Maybe as Hashem Ol Hashem al chatas or shechatan. He has to bring the carbon Hashem. Okay, so v'isvada. So let's take a look at v'isvada. We'll conclude with this because it's good to know what vidui is supposed to be versus what vidui is not. Okay. Pershuhu lashon hoda'a. Okay, what is hoda'a? Hoda'a sometimes means thanks, but hoda'a also sometimes means an acknowledgement. Right? That's one of the explanations of the phrase, Modeh ani lefanecha, melechai v'kayam. Modeh ani lefanecha. But I'm thankful. What if I hate my life? What if I'm suffering? What if I'm in pain every day? Modeh ani lefanecha, some translate to mean, I acknowledge, God, that you gave me back my soul. So, similar, so I mean, sometimes it means thanks, like, you know, no delacha, Hashem, okay, no, Hashem, chatala, but then, oh, maybe even that's not a good one. Modim anach lelach shatat, I mean, it could be thanks, but more accurate of a statement is an acknowledgement. Sometimes an acknowledgement is to thank, but sometimes, like, todah rabah, you know, we always say is thanks, but really, I'm acknowledging, baseline, and I could have intent that says thank you as well, but anyway. Hirshu lashon adah, kinyan hodel abikan kanim, amur gal b'tfira b'seinu, beckonin. Ve'ein zenachon l'dati. Says, I don't think that's what vidui is. Kikra vidui eino hoda asachet. It's not zinden beckonitinus. It's not an acknowledging of the sin. Avala ikra bo haskama agmura la'aziv asachet. He says, what's tshuva? Tshuva is when a person makes not an admission, an indication that I'm leaving the sin behind. As the Rambam says in the laws of tshuva, yigmor belibo shelo yeshuv lezachet le'olam, that a person needs to come to a determination in one's heart that I'm not going to be returning to this sin. Moshkas yazov rasha darko, right? Yazov rasha darko v'shav machshavo sav yashov v'el Hashem. The wicked person should leave his bad ways. Lo no marod alhim le'maseh. We're basically saying, I'm not doing this anymore. V'zeu ikaro shel vidui. That's the main function of what vidui is. So if you're confessing your sin, so, you know, it's like I'm sure Catholics make jokes about this, because I've heard some of them, about, you know, doing a sin and then running to the confessional. Okay, and then doing the same sin and running back to the confessional. So that's very nice to confess, but the fact of the matter is that your intent in your confession is that I'm confessing in order to get forgiven, and then I'm going to do it again. But Rambam is saying that that's not what tshuva is. Tshuva isn't about confession. Tshuva is about taking it to the next stage. And I acknowledge that what I did was wrong, and now I'm committing that I'm not going to do it again. V'zehu ikaro shalvidu. If we say that it only refers to confessing the sin or acknowledging the sin, then we're missing the whole point. Or the main point of what vidui is. And of course, you'd also have a question of what if Rabbi Akiva, who says, are you not even supposed to, when you're saying vidui, you're not supposed to say what the sin is.
Why is that?
Because the whole point is that I'm done. I'm turning over a chapter. I'm turning over a leaf.
Okay.
Says, I don't like the person who that must be Rav Kahana, I guess, who specifies what their sins are. Halalach pirushim furash b'mikra shalfanim le'detzarech lefarei shachet. But it would seem in our pasuk that the person needs to lefarei shachet to actually designate and say what it is. Skip the parenthesis. Gam lashon v'hizvadab lashon ispael ein lamuvan lepirush zeh. But he says that the what does v'hizvadab mean? So you're Richard, you're the grammarian. What's the proper grammar of hispael? Doesn't mean and you should confess. Which I don't even know what that means. Grammar is not my. What does that mean?
It's something you do to yourself.
Okay, so a confession is not something that you do to yourself. Meaning it's insufficient.
It refers to yourself.
Right, but it's insufficient. Okay, it's not an action. It's not an action statement. It's not an action statement. It's something I did this. Right. He's saying, what does v'hisvada mean? It has to be an action statement of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a commitment. If I merely confess, I'm not making any commitments. V'hisvada means there has to be a commitment. And what's that commitment? L'chein yir l'mar, l'farish milas v'hisvada, l'fiyah yikar ha-mukhuvan b'inyan v'idoy ha-cheit. What is v'idoy ha-cheit? V'hu azivas v'harchakas ha-cheit. It's that I leave it and I distance myself from it. Kishar sho, yada. Yud Dalet Hey, that's the shorish of vidui. Asher horasa harchaka v'hashlacha. It comes from a word which means distancing and casting away. Kamo yido evan be yado le gorel. We have to look up what these psukim are. I didn't do that. V'amakom esnam ruchakak mechavras me adam nikra yad. What's v'yad yelcha? That pasuk is referring to having a shovel. What's the shovel for? When you're outside the camp, you take care of your business. You have the shovel to cover up that which you did, your waste. V'chisisa se'asecha. You have to cover up which comes out of your body. V'chein chelak hamufrash min haklal nikra yad kamo chamesh yados. Okay, something which is external. The whole point of vidui chet is not confessing sins, but it's getting rid of and leaving them behind. He says we really need a lot of chizuk to distance ourselves from chet. Since in many cases the sins which we do are sins which we keep doing, they become like second nature to the person. And that's why it's in the form of what you call reflexive, which is an action. It's not enough to confess. It's very easy to confess a sin. Yeah, I did it. I know I did it. Guess what? I'm going to do it again tomorrow. But if I take the step of what vidui is supposed to be, which is to say that I'm acknowledging, yes, on the one hand, but more than acknowledging and saying what it is, I'm actually taking the steps that the Rambam describes in Hilchos Tshuva of aziva sachet. That's what vidui is supposed to be. It's an action for the future rather than a talking point about the past. And I just thought this was a fascinating twist on the way in which we view vidui, because sometimes when we go through vidui, especially in Yom Kippur, when we say vidui so many times, it becomes a rote. Like, why am I, I'll say it again, no problem. But he's saying, no, that's not what vidui is. It's not just about, because especially since if you're a shul in Yom Kippur and you did vidui, when your own private shmones, right? Now you come ahead and do it again. What have you done since then? You already did it. Well, you haven't really bought into the idea that I'm azim asachim. So each time we're doing it, that's what vidui is supposed to be. It's supposed to be like, okay, I'm making more of a commitment for the future that I'm not going to be doing it. And halavai it should work. But
the Rambam delineates very clearly in a sequence of truth.
Right, of course, and Kabbalah Lassi, that's the right, okay, right, but he takes it just from the grammar, which is pretty amazing.
Okay, great.